This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Whether you need a battery for your truck or batteries for your trail cameras, Interstate Batteries has the batteries for your everyday life. Stop into a local retail location. They have thousands upon thousands of them all over the United States. Or go and visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Oklahoma Outdoor Podcast. I am your host, John Hudspeth, and I am feeling so much better than I have the last couple weeks. Finally kind of kicking this COVID thing in the butt. You know, all my symptoms and stuff were gone last week. I just didn't have really any of my energy. I still can't say I'm quite 100% at my normal energy level, but I'm probably at like 95. Like, I'm pretty darn close. I feel like if I could just get a good couple nights of sleep, I'd probably be over it, but man, I've just been busy, and this coming weekend, I have way too many plans to rest, and so I am headed out to the ranch. I'm going to be doing some food plot prep, checking some cameras that don't seem to be working, you know, filling a couple more feeders that I didn't get filled on my last trip out there, and there's just no rest for the weary, so I am not going to listen to my body. I'm going to listen to my mind, and my mind wants to get out there and get ready for hunting season, so that's what I'm going to do this weekend, and as of right now, I don't have any regrets about that. We'll see how I feel, you know, Sunday night and Monday morning at work, but Yeah, very excited. And so, unfortunately, my brother's been really busy, and he wasn't able to get my food plot sprayed, our food plot sprayed, I should say, not just mine. I'm going to have to do that. But, I'm just going to spray them and plant them in the same day. Not too worried about that. It would have been nice to have done in advance, but that's just not how the cookie crumbled. And so he was also not able to get seed. We harvested some oats, and he was hoping to go pick them up, but he didn't get to. And so I'm also going to have to go do that. And so, in totality, I need to spray my plots. I need to get the seed. And I need to plant them. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get all that done in one weekend just because, like there's fertilizer in the sprayer that I need to use. So I'm going to have to pump out the fertilizer so I can put the chemical in there to spray the plots. Our drill is at a different property, so I'm going to have to go to the other property and drive the tractor and drill over to the right property. I have to go, in order to go get the seed, I need to go pick up a seed box, which is at our old property, like 45 minutes away. And so I have a lot of prep work to do before I can do any of the real work. And so, like I said, I'm not sure I can get that all done in a day and a half this weekend. But I'm sure as heck going to try. And then whatever I don't get done, I'll probably be able to get up there the following weekend. I think that's like the 18th or something. And, I should have all the prep work done. I'm thinking, worst case, I just have to run out there on Saturday and actually plant everything. And, still plenty of time before the season. In all honesty, that might even be better, give the chemical some time to work, get that stuff, killed. And like I said, still plenty of time before the season, probably even cool off a little bit. So that's my plan for this upcoming weekend. Super excited about it. One of my cameras, my Cuddy Link, I had my home camera out there already, and then I added some of the Cell Link cameras. And for some reason, when I added those Cell Link cameras, I stopped getting pictures from the home camera. So I don't know if the batteries were too far gone, I should have put fresh batteries in it, or if maybe I messed up on the settings on the Link cameras, but I'm not getting any pictures from those. And so got to check on those, spray my plots, plant my plots, and... yeah, so that's about it. It doesn't sound like a lot when you say it like that, but there's a whole lot that goes into all that. And so that's what I'm going to be doing this weekend. And I just can't wait, guys. I mean, we're like, 3 weeks out, something like that. I think I mentioned this a long time ago on the podcast. I don't know if I've mentioned it recently. I actually will be out of town the first weekend, opening weekend. For a wedding. I have 3 weddings in October, guys. I just got invited to my 3rd one, a cousin. So I have a wedding the first weekend, the 2nd Thursday, and then the 3rd Friday. And so this first one on opening weekend is an old college buddy in Idaho. So I'm flying up to Idaho for him, getting to see all my old friends, and then come back. I will be able to hunt the 2nd and 3rd weekend. The 2nd weekend will be a full weekend because that wedding's on Thursday. But then that following weekend, that wedding is on Friday. And so still got to figure out if I can, drive out there after the wedding on Friday or if I'm going to have to wait till Saturday morning to drive up there. But I do plan to hunt that weekend. I'm not sure if I'm going to get a full weekend or not. And so, man, October weddings, guys, they're killer. I don't know what it is, but for some reason these days, girls think that the only month out of the entire year you can get married is October. And but I can't say too much. My anniversary is actually in October because my wife was one of those women. But my wife's birthday is also in October. And so we got married that same week. And so basically I got to make her happy with an October wedding. And I kind of get to do a 1-2 punch with the anniversary and her birthday. So it doesn't affect me that much. Like I said, I just don't know if I've mentioned that in a while. So I'm going to miss opening weekend, unfortunately. I'm trying to think what else, man. I was looking at duck decoys this week. I got some Cabela's points saved up, burning a hole in my pocket. And so I was looking at duck decoys because I haven't bought new decoys in at least a decade. And so a lot of mine are faded and old and broken. A couple of them have, cracks and holes in them. So definitely time for some new decoys. What else was I looking at? I don't remember. Anyway. I'm so ready for the season, guys, and we're so close. So, But anyway, this week's podcast, it's a good one, you know, like I always say. I'm talking to an old buddy of mine, Charles Admire, and this guy, he's literally known me since I was like 3 years old. So he's actually in my brother's class. So he's a little bit older than I am, not much. But they lived down the street from us growing up. He went to kindergarten with my older brother. And yeah, so we've kind of grown up together. He has a fairly similar story to mine, and we'll get into all that later. I always ruin the podcast in the intro, so I'm going to shut up now. But yeah, you guys, it's going to be just a good old-fashioned BS session. You know, me and him go way back. I'm sure we'll tell some stories, talk a few tactics, and I'm hoping he doesn't tell too many stories about me from the past. So that is what we have in store for you this week. I hope you guys are excited. I hope you guys are pumped. And yeah, continue to shoot your bows, shoot your rifles, shoot your muzzleloaders, shoot your crossbows, shoot your pistols or your slingshots, whatever you're going to be hunting with. Be getting ready. I should throw this in there real quick. I got my my Vector Custom Shop arrows. You know, we had Isaac on a few weeks ago, and I've been shooting them. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. The consistency is just insane. I posted about that on Instagram. Like, it's so crazy. Like, I mean, not only do they shoot good, but something I didn't really notice until my brother brought it up. My brother also ordered some, has been shooting. But the arrows go into the target like the exact same amount every single time. And I don't know if that's just because they weigh the exact same or they shoot the, you know, they're shooting completely straight as opposed to some arrows that can't or something. But man, they are just super nice. And so if you haven't ordered some Vector Custom Shop arrows, you need to get on that because they're very busy. And yeah, we're running out of time. So, okay, enough about that. Yeah, here is my podcast with my good old friend, Charles Admire. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoor Podcast. And today we have a very special guest, Mr. Charles Admire. How are you, Charles?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. For those of you listening, Charles and I go way back. I think I mentioned in the intro, I'm guessing you've known me since I was about three.
Man, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Cause we started, your brother and I started going to school together and then, yeah, I guess it was three.
Yeah. Y'all lived right down the road from us, for most of our childhood. And, so we go way back. And, but before we jump in, I was about to go into our questions here, but before we go too far, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Charles?
Well, you know my name already, Charles Admire, and, man, I like to, get outdoors, hunt and fish a little bit. Went to Texas A&M University, live in Texas, so a little bit, I guess, out of Oklahoma, but married a girl from Oklahoma, so I enjoy the state very much and love getting up there and hope to be hunting and fishing up there more in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you spend a little time in the military, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was in the Marine Corps as an artillery officer, and so, enjoyed my time there. Got to see a little bit of a deployment, and so, yeah, love the Marine Corps.
Yep.
But I guess I got out, let's see, would have been November of 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And I just wanted to awkwardly shout that out. You know, I wanted to make you feel appreciated and everything. And
I appreciate that.
You know, it just hit me. You've actually been on the podcast before. You went on our elk trip last year, and we're on our the podcast that we did coming home that year.
Yeah, man.
So, man.
Yeah, that was my my first Western States hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, and I forgot. This is your second time. You're old news. So, but anyway, you know, one thing that we have in common is we have pretty similar backgrounds when it comes to hunting. You know, neither of us came from like super hardcore, you know, hunting families. You know, my dad grew up doing a little bird hunting and stuff. I think your dad was kind of the same. You know, I think y'all did some dove hunting and stuff growing up. But so before we really jump into this stuff, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of what got you into the outdoors? You know, what got you outside?
Well, you know, I guess watching Westerns as a little kid kind of turns everyone on into adventure and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I always wanted to be outside. Like you said, my dad took us dove hunting and whatnot. But really, there was a colleague of his who had some land in West Texas, and I think that was my first deer hunt, and after that I was hooked. Mm-hmm. So deer hunting, I mean, like you, is like my first love, and everything else kind of, I guess, precipitates from that, you know. Don't get me wrong, I still love to dove hunt and everything, and there have been points where I duck hunted more. There were, you know, some times where really all I could do in a certain year might be to hog hunt, which actually I've recently, that's what I like doing a lot. I got a couple good hogs last year and found out some good ways to fix them. I know a lot of people, you know, don't do that, but dove into a couple different cookbooks that had a few recipes that I was like, you know, there's a lot of meat here and I don't want it to go to waste. And man, that's really reinvigorated not just my love for hog hunting, but for all kinds of hunting. I mean, it's pretty nice to be able to give your wife a little bit of a break and fix some good meals, and there's plenty of good resources out there to do that. So I think I've rambled a little bit, but really what sparked everything was, you know, wanting to be outside and kind of wanting adventure. And it seems like hunting is one of the best ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. No, that's cool, because, you know, one thing that is different between you and I kind of came from an ag background. And so, you know, even though my family weren't big hunters, I always had places to go hunt. And, you know, you just kind of not coming from that big ag ground. You know, it's hard to find, you know, growing up in Texas and stuff. Texas is very privatized. It's hard to find places to go deer hunting. And so, but it is cool that, you know, you found an outlet. You know, most people are a little more accepting of hog hunting and stuff. So it's really cool that you were able to find a way to keep, you know, still get out there and do some hunting.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you know, there's so many people that I could attribute that to. I mean, just like y'all, there were opportunities for me to get out and do those things on friends' places. And, you know, in fact, it was a buddy's dad's old bow, a mutual friend of ours. His dad's old bow is the first deer I shot with a bow. And I think that year I used an old bear from like the late 80s to shoot like two or three does. And boy, my family loved that. My mom and dad loved venison, even though my dad's not a big hunter. And so, I don't know, after that, that's getting back, I guess, what got me into it was, but also kept me going with it was a lot of friends offering opportunities to, you know, to use some land that, you know, otherwise I wouldn't have had access to.
Gotcha. Well, you know, speaking of hogs, that's a good segue. This is like kind of a random thing, but I really wanted to find some way to bring it up. And so, you are personal friends with, an individual who is very near and dear to a lot of Oklahomans. He's a social media influencer / now Netflix, star. You are very good friends with the one and only Dale Brisby. And, and in fact, you were there for one of his, I don't know if it was his first, but one of his first big videos. That involved, you know, some hogs. So I'm going to shut up now and let you take that away. I think you know which story I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know, Dale, you know, he's a real character. I mean, obviously seems like everyone knows him now, but, we went to college together and we were good buddies and rodeoed together a little bit. I was not very good at all. And Dale's a hand, but, we had trapped some hogs. And this is kind of when he was starting to do, you know, the social media thing. And the next thing you know, he was like, hey, let's go see if we can rope these hogs. And, oh man, the video was, it was a lot of fun to make. And he made it look a lot easier than what it actually was. But we had a ton of fun. I mean, we were just afoot and trying to figure out how to get a loop on that front end that was hanging real low. And I'm sure there's tons of people listening to your podcast that are probably like, yeah, well, if you know what you're doing with rope, then, you know, you probably could have made it a lot easier than what y'all did, but who knows? We had a lot of fun with it. And so, yeah, Dale, I mean, it's just awesome what he's been able to do. And that Netflix show coming out has just blown my mind. It's absolutely great for him and couldn't have happened to a better individual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just had to throw that out there. I don't know. I just think it's cool and very jealous of that relationship. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are too. So, but yeah. All right. Well, it's time to jump into the meat and potatoes here. We kind of got the, got the prerequisites out of the way. So one of the, or probably the main thing I want to talk about this episode is you are currently this year getting into the mobile hunting game. If any of our, listeners or, follow my social media, you probably saw a picture of me hanging out of a tree saddle a few weeks ago. And that was actually your tree saddle that I was trying out. It was the first time I'd ever been in one. And you bought one, you've been getting used to it. So, before we really jump into that, tell us a little bit about, why the mobile game? Why are you trying to go mobile?
Okay. I'll back up just a little bit. So my dad, a little bit before he retired, about a year ago now. But a little bit before he retired, he and my mom, bought a little land in Central Texas. And so we, hunt and fish on it and, recreate generally out there and, trying to figure this place out. There's one, I'm talking honey hole, it's 3 out of 4 years. We have, we've killed deer there, killed, gosh, probably a dozen hogs, from that stand and everything else. But it seems like the other sign that I see, and each time I think, this will be another good spot. And it's not a huge place, and so it's not like there are that many spots to have, and I don't want to have stands just sitting on top of one another. But I like to have, kind of what you've talked about and in talking with you, off the podcast, is really to have conditions set right, with wind and my favor and everything else. And so all of that rambling, that's what kind of got me started. Hey, how could I hunt some different places during season when patterns change? Because I'll get some great pictures, of wonderful, looking bachelor groups. And then I might only see, 3 or 4 of those deer sporadically throughout the season. But it seems like when I would see them in different places during the season, they'd hit that spot, 2 or 3 days in a row. So I guess my game plan for attacking them was being a little bit more mobile. So 2 years ago, I bought an XOP stand that are pretty similar to those lone wolf stands,
mm-hmm.
Real easy to set up with a nice set of sticks. And I set those up and those are great. I think they're absolutely wonderful. But what I found out about our place is being in Central Texas, we don't have a bunch of straight trees,
mm-hmm.
and the trees that we have that are straight aren't necessarily real big. And so, nominal diameter, for a lot of our trees are going to be like 6 inches. And that's just, it's hard to get those XOP stands sitting right and vertical in the right spot for areas that I might, want to hunt. So it got me thinking, and I know these have been around a while, and where I first saw them was on some message board, and they're like, I don't know if this has always been true or not, but it was a message board for somewhere in like guys hunting in New York or something like that. And it was right about the time, I know probably most of your listeners listen to, the Ranella crew and Meat Eater podcast, and those guys are great. In fact, their cookbook is what I cook a lot of the hog recipes out of, and just use the ground instead of venison or whatever else. Anyway, right about that same time frame is when I saw a lot of them using it and kind of put it in my mind, and anyway, went down the rabbit hole of a bunch of message boards and everything else. And so what I started to see on top of that is that, obviously a lot of these guys use it for public land hunting, but there are ways, trying to minimize scent and everything else, where some guys use a single stick to climb. And I was like, well, how do they get those, all their equipment down, and guys basically set up a rappelling system once they get to the top, and then have a little a little 550 cord strap that they can kind of, you know, just flick real hard and have a, oh, I guess you'd call that a hitch up at the top that loosens, and it'll just come down your tree. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I say all this is because I truly do want it to be as mobile as possible and want to cut down as much scent as I can. And so I figured even if I didn't have, you know, the straps for my climbing sticks close to the ground, I would cut down on my scent. Anyway, other opportunities, I kind of put it to the side a little bit because, you know, on a budget and everything else. But an opportunity to hunt some family land came up in Missouri, extended family. I got a uncle who's got a big soybean farm, and he farms corn up there too. And he's got a couple stands of trees, but I mean, it's big enough where I'm not going to be able to hunt it, you know, consistently, you know, longer than maybe a long weekend. I just have to be as mobile as possible. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all of that was the impetus for the saddle. Mm-hmm. Ended up, one of the saddle manufacturers had a sale, and anyway, saved up my allowance and went for it. So.
Nice.
Yeah, but now my wife gets embarrassed because I'll climb up trees in our neighborhood, and she's just... We'll get looked sideways, and she gets embarrassed, but mm-hmm. it's a lot of fun. I don't know. It adds a new wrinkle, and I think it's a new tool for just, you know, those spots that might not be as established or maybe as well-traveled as the one that we have on the place. Mm-hmm. I know I rambled there for a little bit, but the tool that I'm using it for is, yeah, moving on our place a little bit, but also for that place in Missouri that I'm not going to get to scout a whole bunch. I'm just going to basically get a long weekend to go hunt in. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only stand I'm going to bring up there. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh man, all kinds of questions after that. But, first the one stick method, that was something I had never seen before. You know, I'd seen saddles. I'd seen a bunch of saddle hunters and stuff. For those of you who have never heard of it, you basically, you know, I mean, it is what it sounds like. You use one stick, one climbing stick to get up the tree. So you basically climb your stick, you kind of set your saddle, reach down, grab the stick, set it up above you, get up the tree. And then like you said, you basically set up a rappel system to get down. And, you know, while you're doing that, I guess in my head, I had it that you were doing it for weight, like, you know, less things to carry. I didn't even think about the scent factor of it, of, you know, like, just, you know, touching the sticks, touching the straps and all that stuff. Yeah, you're getting all of that scent off the ground up the tree with you. I didn't put that together when you were showing me that.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if that's just me overthinking things or what, but I figured the less cloth was lower, mm-hmm. you know, even if that cloth was, you know, a strap holding that stick on, because I figured the metal itself probably wouldn't smell, but mm-hmm. but maybe the cloth would. I don't know, but you're exactly right. The other big factor is the weight, mm-hmm. you know.
Gotcha. The most entertaining part of all that was watching my brother rappel down the tree in front of his children. Mr. Mr. Army Ranger figured he didn't need any help. He could figure it out.
Airborne, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true. Yep. You kind of talked about, you know, what led you to buying the saddle, you know, hunting there at your family's place and in the small diameter trees and stuff, but... You know, let's say you're going to Missouri, like you talked about, you know, bigger hardwood trees, I'm assuming. And, mm-hmm. so, you know, especially since, you know, you already talked about how you have an XOP stand, what is making you choose the saddle on that hunt over the tree stand? And, you know, this is just kind of like, there's a lot of people having this argument of, you know, light tree stand versus saddle hunting. And it seems like most people are, you know, one or the other. They either love their saddle and they, you know, they think tree stands are things of the past, or you love the old school tree stand and you think saddles are stupid. And so, you know, since you're kind of, you know, dealing with both of them, what's going to make you choose that saddle over that tree stand?
The thing I like about the saddle for that hunt, I'll put it in those terms, for that hunt, because I love them both. Mm-hmm. I think the comfort factor is there more for a conventional, you know, hang on stand, but I think the convenience of setting up the saddle is night and day. I'm big on noise. I think that I'm making more noise than I'm probably what I'm actually making.
Mm-hmm.
But setting up that saddle is really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very quiet. Even for someone, I mean, I've only been doing it in the off season and, you know, sort of practicing maybe around Christmas last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so after, you know, practicing on and off for 9 months, it's a lot easier to set up and take down. And even with being strapped in and everything, and those XOPs are light, or, you know, whatever light stand you're going to choose, whether it's that or Lone Wolf or what is the other one, Novix or something like that?
Yep, Novix, a few others out there.
And those are all great. I love them. I mean, like I said, I hunt out of that XOP. It's actually set up as kind of a permanent set for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
One is I didn't want to break down that set to go up to Missouri to hunt. My time frame to go up there is going to be pretty short, and so having to take it down from Central Texas and go up there, you know, is going to be a little bit of a hassle with the noise, taking it down, then putting it back up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is I think, I mean, just from doing a lot of, you know, internet study or whatever, and then obviously what I know from going up and visiting, you know, my uncle's place is that, or my aunt and uncle's place, I should say, is there's pretty much two places they're going to be, and they're about a mile apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to have, you know, I'm not going to be driving through his fields or anything. So I'm going to be walking it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a lot lighter to carry, for one, a lot easier to set up for two. The jury's still out on, for me, if I'm going to hunt with the sticks or not. So I've gone with like, I've done away with even the straps for my sticks, and I'm using like Amstel, daisy chains. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm using. So those are like super quiet too. Mm-hmm. And I've made them big enough where if the circumference of the tree is 8 feet, I can still get it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So whether they're real little
real
or real
quick,
big,
I know what you're talking about, but can you explain that daisy chain kind of, if you can, for the listeners?
So Amstel, I'm probably saying it right. It might be Amsteel. I don't know. It's one or the other. But it's like, from what I understand, it's the same material to make like winches out of. It's like super, super strong for its weight. And so what you can do is, I think the one that I bought is like 3/8 of an inch in thickness. Maybe not even that much. Maybe only even 1/4 inch. But it's like super thin. And then I just doubled it back on itself, tied it off, and then tied a bunch of loops in it. And so I can throw it around the tree. And then from the speed button on my sticks, I just find the loop that's nearest to it, tug down real hard. And there's enough, you know, pressure on that tree if you get it, you know, relatively tight and then set it before you start climbing,
mm-hmm.
that you don't have to run through a ratchet strap or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll definitely hold you. I mean, those things are so strong.
Yeah. So basically like a series of loops, and you just kind of put it on the closest one, put your weight on the stick, and yeah, no ratchet required.
Exactly. So. And so when I have it at the top, the only thing that I still have a ratchet for, but I've gone to one of those, I don't even know what you call them. What binds the strap is just a pull,
mm-hmm.
you know, deal, and it doesn't actually ratchet.
Yeah.
That's what I use at the top, just because it's a little bit thicker, and I don't know, makes me feel safer. Probably isn't any safer, but that's what I use for the actual platform that I stand on when I get to the top.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, so it cuts down a little bit on noise, and it cuts down on weight, and it's just, it's easier to set up. I mean, I can be set up in that deal and, you know, 5 minutes, and there's probably tons of people that listen to you that can be set up in their, you know, stands, you know, without having them set up before, that could do it in the same amount of time. I'm not that quick, and I have dropped a stand before when I'm up at the tree, mm-hmm. and that's always frustrating. So I figured just do it like this.
Yeah, gotcha. Cool. So I'm also interested, you know, just because you are kind of, you know, or you are new to the saddle game and stuff, you know, you've been practicing, which I think is good. I hear that a lot from people's, you know, when you get your setup, you know, put it up in the yard and practice getting up and down the tree. It sounds like you've been doing that. So, but as far as actual hunting, You know, you've been just like any other new person would, you know, you've been researching stuff online and watching videos. So out of all the stuff you've researched, basically what has kind of made your final list? Like when you go in for your first hunt with your saddle, what are you bringing with you?
So I think first hunt with like just nothing set up on the tree or anything else, I'm probably bringing, I like hunting high and, I like getting, and this is probably doesn't need to be said, probably everyone on here likes hunting high, but I like getting above 20 feet. So I have the longer of the climbing sticks, so the 3-step climbing sticks, and I'd have 4 of those and spaced out with a little aider, so a little piece of webbing that's tied so that I can have another step on the bottom of that and then just reset that each time that I put another stick up. To give me basically, instead of just 3 steps, 4 steps. Mm-hmm. So I'd have my 4 sticks. I'd have the aider. I'd have my saddle. I would have 2 different ropes. So you got your lineman rope when you're setting up as you're going up, if you're doing it kind of the conventional way. And then I'm not sure what they call it, but just the rope you tie off to once you get to the top that actually has the hitch in it that goes around the tree.
Is that your bridge?
No, the bridge is actually on, that's what ties to your bridge, but
okay.
The bridge is on the saddle.
Gotcha, okay.
So basically 2 different, you know, shorter length rope. Even though I've done the single stick thing, it's still something that I'm not super comfortable getting up and down. So I'll probably go with all 4 sticks, the aider, 2 different ropes, you know, 1 alignment rope and 1 to tie off. Obviously bow and all the stuff that I use there, and then a platform, and then a strap that has a bunch of hooks on it to hang my pack and bow and stuff like that, you know, on the tree. So I when I'm using that setup, I don't use a screw in. I'd use that, and then debating whether or not to bring my camera this year, so we'll see.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And then, one thing, you know, I love that you brought your saddle and that I got to try it out because, you know, I've been curious about them. The concept seems really cool, but, you know, when you just see them, they look goofy. It seems like it would be goofy to stand in. You know, I'll admit it was extremely comfortable. You know, I do think, you know, you hear people talk about saddle shape, how you kind of have to, you know, get your feet used to it and your hips used to it and everything. But a lot of people, when they see it and they're not real familiar with it, their first question is, how on earth do you shoot a bow out of that thing? And that was definitely mine too. And I really regret not bringing my bow up there to shoot out of it because, yes, I liked the saddle. I liked how it felt. But, even sitting in it, it was a little like, how would I, and you know, they call it your offhand shot. Like if you're right-handed shooting to your right, if you're left-handed shooting to your left, like how do you make that shot? And so, I don't know, that was kind of a rambling way of talk about shooting out of the saddle.
So shooting out of it. Okay. So when you're up there, you can move around the tree, you mm-hmm. know, especially if you got a good, especially if you got a good platform where you can set your feet, you know, real well first, since there's always tension, you know, pulling on, what you've tied off to the tree, you know, on that rope that's tied off to the tree, you know, connected to your bridge, you know, part of your saddle, you're able to brace, you know, actually pretty easily. And so the shot that you're referring to, they got a name for it and I can't remember it off the top of my head, but if you're shooting to your right and I'm right-handed, the way that I've seen guys do it is they kind of position their feet where they're, basically like the outside portion of your left foot would be touching the tree. And so your feet are almost like, if toes pointing in is perpendicular to the tree, you're parallel to the tree, if that makes sense.
Kind of like standing at attention, but turned to the right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing that, and you're also kind of hiked out from the tree a little bit. So, I mean, your butt is kind of, you know, pulling away from the tree. But that your bridge. bridge, since it's not tied off like right in the center, it moves through the carabiner. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is you kind of turn your body a little bit to the side, and then you take your the hand that's holding the bow, so my left hand, and you put it in between your rope and the tree, and then you can brace that rope on your shoulder. And so it helps, and it almost locks in your shoulder like a shooting rest, you know, with a rifle or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I've actually found it's a little bit easier to brace, you know, once you have everything set and you realize that you're not going anywhere. But I think all that starts with, you know, having a good platform and having your feet set up right on the platform. Mm-hmm. And then realizing, hey, I can put my arm here. And the same thing for a shot behind you. You know, for a shot behind you, you would just do everything in reverse. So for a right-handed shooter, your right foot, you know, butts up to that tree on the outside, and then you're standing at attention the other way with the tree on your right side. And as you draw back, you know, it's a little bit harder to, like, brace against that rope, but you can do it. Or you could just, you know, have it pulling against your hips. And then you kind of, you know, angle down so you can shoot backwards, which is another benefit that I didn't even bring up before. It's a little bit easier to get shots behind you, mm-hmm. you know, after you've practiced them a few times. You have more of a 360 view without having to stand up and turn around and everything else. When I'm sitting in my, you know, regular stands, my regular hang-on stands, I make probably more noise than the average person turning around because I can be clumsy. But
you're a big boy. You can say it. You're a big boy. Not round.
Well, I mean,
no, you're very stout. You're just a very big person.
That's what it is. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard to get, you know, 230 moved around. So there you go.
Yeah. But yeah, that was one thing that I thought, you know, like I said, I didn't bring my bow, but of course I was still up there pretending like I was shooting a bow. And, yeah, like, you know, being able to kind of roll your hips and let that rope feed through the carabiner, taking a shot directly behind you, to me, that's easier than taking a shot to the right, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you were, especially if you were doing this on like a, it doesn't even have to be like a private land situation, but just a situation where you have a decent idea of, you know, where you think the deer are going to come from and where they're headed. You know, it'd be pretty easy to just kind of set yourself up on that side of the tree to kind of keep everything to your left, you know. And then, you know, worst case, if a deer does show up on your other side, you know, you can get around there. It just might not be as easy. But, you know, to me, the solution would be just kind of always have, you know, like I said, if you're right-handed, just kind of always have your right-hand side being downwind of you. And, you know, you're probably not going to get a shot there anyway. So, you know.
Exactly.
Take that out. Because
that, I think, of the ones you brought up, that's probably the harder shot to make. The one behind you is pretty easy, and the one in front of you, pretty easy. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that can make the one that's going to their shooting arm side, mm-hmm. you know, they could make it without, you know, any problems whatsoever. Guys have been doing it for a long time. But that's the one for me that's more challenging than the rest. Mm-hmm. But you're exactly right.
Gotcha. Well, cool, man. Man, we're like kind of on that edge of shutting it down and going a little longer. So I'm going to throw a curveball at you. And, why don't you just give us one good hunting story to close it out? It can be dove hunting, hog hunting, deer hunting, doesn't matter. Just, anything you got on the top of your head.
Oh, man, anything. Okay. This is a pretty good one. I was hunting with some buddies and, again, I like all different kinds of huntings and situations to hunt in, I should say. And, when I was living close to College Station, there was a buddy of mine who had a string of hog dogs and, we were hunting one, I guess it was February and it was pretty cold. I mean, nothing like Oklahoma cold, but it was cold enough where there was, you know, we were all layered up pretty good. It was probably in the mid 30s mm-hmm. and his dogs, you know, struck a trail and we had chased this hog through thick stuff. I mean, it was briars and undergrowth and everything else, and we're on a couple of horses and we're running them, and his dogs finally bay up and we come through and it's on the other side of this creek. Well, this creek is running, I guess that creek was running north-south, and on the south end, I mean, really close to where that hog is bayed up on the other side, there's pretty good size, private lake right there. And we had fished it before, and so, you know, we knew it pretty well. And most of it was pretty shallow, but there was a deep part. And he was like, man, we're going to catch this hog. And I was like, all right, whatever. And I was, you know, a group of us, I think it was four or five of us, and someone suggested that, we go around. And the guy whose dogs they were, he was like, no, we're going to go. I'll just cross right here. Well, he takes two steps in, and next thing you know, both he and his horse go under, and the only thing left on the surface is his hat. And we all had a pretty good laugh. Anyway, we ended up getting the hog and everything else. And I think we actually smoked that one. It was pretty good. Pretty good smoked. We had to marinate it for like 24 hours. Pretty good, though. But yeah, it was pretty funny story.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds miserable. I don't care where you are, 32, 34 degrees. That's cold. So.
It was so cold. That was the end of that hunting day. I think we had to dry him off and get him in the truck. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good one, though.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on this evening. And, I think it's cool to just talk to people, you know, of all experience levels. And so it's really exciting to kind of lead you into this journey. And I'm really excited for you. And I hope you have some good success out of your saddle this season.
Heck yeah, man. Mm-hmm. And I'll keep you updated. I will say the cool thing that I saw about saddles that I didn't even think about, you know, talking about Western hunting, I sent it to you earlier today, but one of the guys that really got me into, you know, being interested in Western hunting, just following his content, he shot an elk out of his saddle today. Mm-hmm. One of the Hush guys.
Yep.
Get Hushing guys.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah, that was really cool. And man, that does seem like a, you know, if you can climb up and find a nice little secluded wallow or something, then yeah, that could very well be the ticket. So,
oh yeah, and it wasn't just like you know, just a spike or a satellite. That was a good bull.
Oh yeah, 6x6. So,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, well, cool, man. I really appreciate it, and yeah, keep us updated. I'll keep the viewers updated with your success, and I really hope you go up there to Missouri and lay down a slammer.
Oh, dude, even if it's, you know, nothing as far as the horns are concerned, they're just so much bigger bodied and mm-hmm. coming off that corn and soybeans, mm-hmm. man, I'd be tickled to get one of those.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All righty, sir. Well, good luck to you, and we will talk to you later.
All right. Sounds good, man. See ya.
See ya. Thank you, Charles, for coming on the show today. Thank you guys for listening. I loved having Charles on. Not only is he, you know, a good friend of mine from way back in the day and in the present, but it's just nice to have some people on who are, you know, trying new things, you know, pushing through stuff, learning stuff, because that's what this is all about. You know, it's awesome to have somebody who's willing to, you know, put in the work, do the research, figure this stuff out. So I'm really excited for Charles. I hope he has some success with his saddle this year. It really has me curious. I've never been that curious about saddle hunting. I guess I've been the old school tree stand guy through all this, but it just seems like more and more people are just talking about it and I guess just relaying the benefits of it, you know, just like Charles was talking, lighter, you know, simple, quiet, scent, all that good stuff. And so, yeah, thanks again, Charles, for coming on. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Once again, hunting season is just around the corner, so keep up to date with my social media accounts, Instagram, Facebook, email me, and hopefully soon, I know I keep talking about it, I'm going to try to do a little more filming this year than I have in the past, and so maybe even some YouTube content coming down the pipe. And so yeah, look forward to that. I hope you guys have a fantastic week, and I will see you guys right back here next week on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.